Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, November 5th, 2019. It is 9 o'clock, and we're gathered for a general discussion at the Board of County Commissioner Conference Room with all three commissioners present. We get to start with an update today with the United States Forest Service with Matt Pachorek, our district ranger. Is that right?
Yeah.
No. Yes. All right. Good to see you, Matt. It's been a while.
You too.
Good morning.
Thanks for having me here. I just had wanted to go over a few things. Specifically around current projects and future projects,
mm-hmm.
And then I'd be happy if you had anything specific you wanted to talk about. That. Got a couple maps here. And then a visual aid.
Awesome. I'll pass it back.
Yep.
Nicely done.
So the second one, Upper Bridge Restoration Project, that's a current project we're working on. You'll notice there's five different names as part of that on there, and these are specific areas, specific projects within that project we're working on right now. So Wild Horse is the first one, and that's going to be a timber sale that should be coming out beginning of the year. We have a preliminary advertisement out right now to let industry know that this is coming up, and like I said, we'll plan on the official offering beginning of the year. In addition to that, we're looking at either the Briggs Valley or the Secret Timber Sale as the next one coming up, and we'll be working on that in the spring. And
is a restoration project, the definition of a restoration project is a timber sale and reforesting.
Or more.
Or management,
yep.
In general.
Yep. So it could
be a thinning,
yep.
Project. It could be defoliating, cleaning the forest floor,
yep.
That type of a thing.
So, for instance, on the Wild Horse, there'll be a portion of that is a timber sale where we sell the wood. And then we'll use some of those receipts to also treat some of the areas that aren't smaller trees that aren't commercially viable. And then we'll also look at things such as underburning in the future.
So you are restoring the forest for production? Because you're taking out smaller trees that will never reach maturity or will never be marketable?
Correct. And also from a fuel reduction and hazardous fuel standpoint. So
agricultural maintenance.
Yeah. So a couple different things going on there. And then there's also, one of the things we have to look at is improving habitat for wildlife and such. And so that's part of that, too. But so there's a combination of different things that are part of the purpose of that project. Fuel reduction being one of the high priority ones.
Okay. And why was this one chosen, the Upper Bridge?
So this
the
was
high priority.
Yeah. So if you go to the second map,
mm-hmm.
It's kind of a little overview, and you'll see just west of Grants Pass, kind of the Upper Bridge shape there.
Uh-huh.
So that kind of gives you an idea of why we chose that one. It was
compared to the Klondike fire outline around it.
This actually started before that. So one of the things we looked at was we had a number of fires kind of surrounding that valley. There's some high value things in there. It's campgrounds, just a great place to visit. So that was one of the reasons we picked that, because it hadn't seen a lot of fire, and a lot of that did burn last year.
You're going to fix it before it has an opportunity to
that,
burn it.
That was why we started with it. And actually, during the Taylor and Klondike, that we were able to burn out before the fire in there, and actually kept the fire effects in there to a minimum, and actually kept this project viable, because had it all blown out in there, we would have had to stop and probably gone to a different area. So
now you mentioned campgrounds in that area, and it's probably off the subject, but Briggs Valley Campground There for a while, it was, no, we're just going to dismantle it.
So two campgrounds there, Sam Brown Campground.
Sam Brown.
And there's the associated horse camp with it. Mm-hmm. And then Big Pine, I think, is the one you're talking about.
So, sixth grade field trip, I remember that.
So the unfortunate problem with Big Pine was a lot of the, including the Big Pine, died.
Right.
And right now, we're actually, there's no decision been made on how we're going to proceed, other than it's closed right now because we can't leave it open and have a bunch of hazard trees in there to the public.
Okay, all right. So right now it's a safety issue.
Correct.
That's keeping it out of the road. If you figure out a way to either thin it with helicopters or whatever you do where it's not, where it's low impact, you're not taking it off and saying, we're going to take Big Pine Campground off because the Big Pine died.
Correct. So there's really two options going forward on Big Pine. Either we deal with the hazard trees and reopen it, or we get rid of the campground and turn it back to the forest.
Okay, is there any threat to the Hunky Bunk Valley Jotam Downs store?
Not sure what that is.
You never been there?
No,
my gosh, I'll take you up there someday.
That sounds made up.
So what I've heard a lot about Big Pine is there's a lot of, I've heard a ton of community interest in keeping that.
Correct.
Oh, yeah. So, up there a lot.
So what I've asked my folks to do is to go in there and do that evaluation of the hazard trees and see how many we're cutting down, see how we can do that, and the campground itself needs some work to kind of bring it back to where we want people in it. So that's going on right now, and like I said, I've heard a ton of interest from the community on keeping that as a campground. So we got a couple steps to do before we get.
You have a ton plus one.
Yeah,
very interesting in keeping that.
So yeah, like I said, I hear a lot about that campground. So we're working on doing some steps to.
Okay.
Make a decision there.
One thing is, this is the project that had an EPA started, or an environmental assessment, 14 years ago? And it was paused and so easiest to get done and keep moving forward. So that's why this project is being picked.
Yeah.
And this is the one Wally and I went over and took part in, offering comments.
Yeah. In the objection process, so yeah, so that's the decision was signed, and we're starting to implement that project.
Correct.
So,
have you been up there?
Not since I was a kid.
That's good. Neither by.
So, a couple things on how we're moving forward on these projects. So, there's probably going to be two or three I would call traditional timber sales, where the value of the wood out there is going to be enough to offer it, and people will bid on it and get that work done. Two portions of this, the Taylor portion and the Shan Apple portion, are, I would say, economically, you know, on the edge. And those.
Is it just quality of timber, or did they get burned out?
It's volume, number, amount of wood, and quality.
Terrain,
all those things that factor into economical timber sale.
We faced the same thing in the Taylor Creek fire.
Yep.
We didn't sell everything that we put up.
Yep. And so what we're looking at is other opportunities to get those projects done, such as a stewardship contract where we can offset some of that value, including bringing other funding in or Forest Service funding to supplement it to get the project done. So in the cases where it's kind of iffy on the economic side of it, then we're looking at doing some other ways. But if it's a good timber sale, our plan is to offer it as a timber sale.
We don't have any of the ONC Federal Service lands, do we?
We do. There is some. I can't.
And are they in this area?
I have to.
Because that's one thing that we have asked specifically, is not to have stewardship.
Yeah.
Or
I'll double check
on ONC lands.
I think the kind of checkerboard ONC actually misses it, but I'll double check to confirm.
Okay, but you're aware of the Forest Service's portion of ONC lands as well, correct?
Yeah. Okay. I have the map. I just don't have it.
Yeah.
On this map.
But that is one thing that we've been trying to, looking at all the emails back and forth between Eric Burke and Rocky McVeigh about the controverted lands and making sure that we are keeping those separate and not doing the...
And my understanding is, for the Forest Service portion, we have been tracking those throughout the years. I just don't have it on this particular map.
But the concern of a stewardship project on that would also be... again, those are revenues back to the county.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm aware of that. So
awesome.
I'll double check that and follow up with you on if there's any of those in here.
Thank you. Sorry, did you have more, Dan? I didn't mean to.
No, I was just getting ready to bring the ONC element into it. Very important.
So just for your sake, and Darren, I don't know if you are aware either, it's something I've learned in the last few months, that there's about 500,000 acres of ONC lands that are managed by Forest Service, where the rest of them are all BLM. And they're controverted lands that managed by Forest Service, but they're still supposed to be managed under the ONC contract, with 50% coming back to the counties. And so for the most part, I always thought the BLM had all of the ONC lands, but there's this specific thing, and you'll hear the terminology is ONC controverted lands, and those ones are the ones managed by Forest Service. And it was one of the things we talked to Undersecretary Jim Hubbard about, and he was aware of them, but one of the guys in Medford wasn't, so it was kind of interesting. I'm like, how's the undersecretary knowing you?
Yeah, some new people there, new to the area, so I think that's part of it. And so 50%, in ONC lands, 50% goes back.
Shared receipts.
A normal timber sale, 25%.
To roads, yeah.
Stewardship, zero. So
yeah.
There's, but also the... Typically, we use a stewardship when it's not economically viable. So it probably would have never been a timber sale anyways. Mm-hmm. So there's...
Wouldn't have been one that we would have had anything come out of.
Exactly.
We need the appropriate forest management no matter...
zero, it's going to be under stewardship.
Yep. So it's kind of... It's different tools. We try to use the right tool for the instance. Like I said, if it's a good timber sale, we're going to have a good timber sale.
Mm-hmm.
If it's maybe not a good fit, we're going to look at doing it other ways. So... So, from Upper Briggs, so we got that ongoing. That's going to provide some work implementation for a number of years for us. But we're also looking into the future.
What are you looking at for? And I probably get cart before the horse here. What are you looking at for this whole plan? 10 years? 15 years?
So for Upper Briggs, well, probably 2 or 3 years of actual timber sales.
Okay.
The work generally takes longer than that,
right.
So it's ongoing. But we're planning on a couple, 2 to 3 years of work to prepare the timber sales and other type of things.
Now, they changed the payout type thing on timber sales on federal land. It used to be when you had the sale and you got a bid and the sale was finalized, or the sale was awarded, that's when we got our money. And now they've changed it to when the actual work is done.
So I think it's when I think it's when they get we get the money from the purchaser,
right.
Is when then it gets distributed.
Okay, because they were talking about it the other day that like BLM we had at ONC we had a BLM duo there, and they said yeah we're going to increase the amount of board footage that we're going to cut on BLM land in the ONC. However, instead of getting paid when the sale at the time of sale they used to award the money. Now it's when the job is actually done and the logs are in the mill and they get paid for it. I says, you mean, so right now it used to be we would get our money and then away you go. But now it's, you get the environmental say, well, we're gonna file a lawsuit. We're going to place an injunction on that. We're going to put a halt to that. We're going to protest it. It might be 10 years before that sale ever gets cut. And so, therefore, the money, we really don't get any money until it actually meets the mill.
And I don't know if it's different between Forest Service and
BLM. I don't know.
I thought for Forest Service, it was always when we got the money, then when the purchaser gave us the money, then we distributed it.
And that's fair, I would think.
Yeah.
So you're not out the money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do in the county forest, we do kind of a upfront and then at a point and at a point.
Yeah, that's exactly how we do it, too.
Yeah.
So we'll require both a big guarantee upfront,
mm-hmm.
then an initial payment once it gets awarded, and then as it progresses, then mm-hmm. we'll get
kind of a final payment.
Yeah, and so on. So it's that's kind of how it roughly works for the Forest Service. So I think it's always been that, but I'm...
Okay.
But
well, I know they changed it on the BLM side, and it was interesting because, you can't really... the sale goes through, and you think, oh, we're going to get our money, and then here comes the environmentalists with their signs, and they know you're not going to cut that, we're not going to let you cut it, and so on and so forth, and then you're stuck.
Yep.
You don't have any idea. That's some of that money is not really used for stable funding, but it really comes in handy for a county like Josephine that needs, you know, we have a budget we need to try to meet. We have to meet the budget. Okay.
So other, kind of going on from there, the next area we're looking at is actually what we're calling the Riverhouse area. And it's, if you look on the map, it's the area that's kind of south of Cave Junction and south east of Cave Junction on this this map right here. That includes it, this, the hatched area isn't quite right, but it actually surrounding it's kind of the Tequila area. Also, the going over the I forget the number of the road going up Half Camp, but so it's kind of in that area. Again, it's going to be.
So it's covering two districts.
No, it's all still on Wilderness.
Districts, okay, it still goes down in.
Yeah, so actually, part of my district actually cuts into California.
Right? Okay.
So, but it's kind of that area. And we're both looking at, again, you know, having a fuels emphasis. We've done some work around kind of the Tacoma area, but also we want to kind of take a bigger look at that. So that's kind of what we're thinking of next areas to look at. There is some fairly, I would say, good support in the community for doing some additional work in there. We've been kind of working slowly with them. And they... through all accounts, are looking forward to this project. So, but I'm also interested in if from your perspective, if I'm off base there too. So, and beyond that next project, if you look at the crosshatched area west of Grants Pass, kind of surrounding Upper Briggs, that would be the following one.
So the hashes are the project?
Roughly, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't show, the Klondike and Taylor Fire doesn't show up in this map, but it does kind of follow that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, the other ongoing project we have right now is, we call it the Butcher Knight Slate, so the Butcher Knight Creek, Slate Creek, in that area. It's a smaller area, you'll see it right there. That's been a project that we've been working on for a number of years now. We've had some timber sales out of there. We've done a lot of, if you go up Waters Creek or Slate Creek, if you've seen some of that work piles that we've been doing in there for the past few years, we've been doing some understory thinning in there. It actually looks really great, I think, in there. And non-commercial treatment, and we'll be burning some more of those piles this winter. But that's part of that. Part of it is kind of link some of these areas together to... hopefully prevent some of these large-scale fires from developing.
Dan, which road was it that the road washed out that we were having to fix? Was it Slate or Waters?
We fixed that. That's all been repaired.
Yeah, the fire came down near the road on that one, on Waters Creek?
It was more Slate Creek, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that's
direct correlation. Do you have timber... harvesting up there and maintenance, and we got a road that washes out, and where the 25% that's going back to our roads fund actually has a direct correlation with impact of usage and
and ability to get some of the
and that one, that's not the last we'll hear from Waters Creek either, because that one particular spot, it's steeper in a cow's face and it's a bend in the thing, and it just keeps chiseling away until the road falls away.
Have you figured out the angle on that cow's face? That's pretty steep.
It's fun.
I always look at a cow, and you ever look in a cow's eyes? There's nothing back there to receive the signal.
I don't look at cows as often
you can
as
go,
I might.
And the cow doesn't go. They're a pretty amazing animal.
I got to get you the guy who thought he could wrangle cows and decided to try to wrangle a deer.
Deer has a lot more weapons on board than a coward.
Oh, it's a funny read. Yeah. Okay, sorry to interrupt you, Matt.
That's fine. As part of the Butcher Knife slate, so a number of 5-6 years ago, we had a timber sale in there. And for whatever reason, there was a couple units that we didn't log out of there. We've been actually working with ODF on some of those. So they're actually out there right now marking those two units. that either, you know, they've kind of grown over time, so they're now we think they're economically viable. We didn't have the capacity to take that project on, but with an agreement with ODF, they're actually going to sell that sale for us. They've done all the work through what we call it a good neighbor agreement. They can, they get to keep the funds that are generated out of that, and they can recycle them into other projects on Forest Service land. So that project, they're getting close to the finishing that up, likely be, again, probably beginning of the year or spring before they sell that. But they're actually going to sell it under their authority and help us out on it. And that's a project that we didn't have the capacity to take on right now, but they did, and it's actually
working. Do you use them often?
We're starting to use them more. They're actually doing some stuff. They've done some stuff over in the Gold Beach area, and they're doing some stuff over in the Prospect area right now, too.
Yeah.
So that I would say there's more to come on that. We'll be doing more with them in the future. And so the other part about this map I wanted to chat about, I don't know how familiar you are. You probably got a little bit of digest on the CFLRP proposal. Collaborative Forest Landscape Restoration Program. That's a program the Forest Service has that it's a competitive process. Anywhere in the nation can put these projects forward. They offer, I believe, up to $40 million over a 10-year period to help get work done out there.
I know they were asking for $80 million, or was $80
million? I think it's 40. Well, I think it's $40 million they contribute, and then the... Region of the Forest has to contribute their own money.
And the counties aren't signed in as a collaborating. We still want to kind of have our voice separately.
Yep.
But again, it was the question of these projects right now, money goes towards other environmental and watershed restoration. And so if it would have been a harvest, if it would have been a forest sale or something like that, it would have brought money to the counties, and these are not.
I'm not sure it's either or. I think some of the idea behind it is I think we still have the tool of timber sale to use in these processes.
Okay.
So I think we're also looking at the areas, again, uneconomical to help, that money would help implement some of that work on the ground. So I think our process is, if it's a good timber sale, then we're going to keep it as a timber sale, and it's where the...
We just don't want, you know, like when you say, well, we're going to take the money out of this, and it's not viable, so we'll take whatever we get out of it, move it over here to do something else over here for the U.S. Forest Service. We're looking at it as you took that over there to do it for the Forest Service, but that would have been money coming to the county and to make it a viable timber sale, depending on what you're doing with it. It's like in my business, I can make a whole bunch of money roll back into my business, and it doesn't show up to the IRS, you didn't make any money. The IRS doesn't get their share of it, but, you know, that's okay to a certain extent. But these counties, these southern counties, we were very heavy on the harvest side of it, and now the harvest side seems to be just enough to keep managing the forest rather than do anything for us. So that's a concern.
Yeah, absolutely. And we spend a lot of time on looking at the economics of projects before and during, so that we can try to find the best tool for that. And
yeah, just keep us in mind.
Absolutely.
When you're doing you know, we like to at least have a voice at the table on some of this stuff.
I understand. So this CFLRP process has started for the Forest Service. We've put an initial kind of application in, and this process, there's a couple of different phases to see if we even get funded for that. And
has the budget been appropriated? Because it was
there
was an ask, and it was a zero with the president's, and then I know there was an 80,000 hope, and it was zeroed out, and then so Congress, what have they approved yet on appropriation?
I don't think nothing's been finalized as far as I go. So it could disappear.
But there's a plan in place if you get the funding.
Exactly. So, and no decision has been made on if this is going to be one of the areas chosen. So there's plenty of opportunity, and I'm not sure how you. I'd be happy to spend. It's very complicated, and I'm still kind of learning it. But you know, we want to make sure that you're in the loop as we move forward. And there's, like I said, there's no decision been made yet, so there's opportunity to provide that comment if you're interested.
Have you guys talked to Curry County Commissioners?
Yes.
Court came over for that meeting. Yep. Yeah, so he's on board.
Yep, he's in the loop for sure.
Okay.
So those are that's kind of looking to the future. And regardless of whether we do we get approved for that, this is still kind of our priority process locally for what we're looking next. So
any counter to these projects that the main concerns we saw is how expensive they are. Is what, 1,200 an acre or something like that?
So typically if we go in and we cut non-commercial smaller trees out and we pile them and burn them, it's running about $1,000 an acre roughly to do that work on the ground.
And so from what I remember, the conversation is that initially cost is extremely high to get the fuels reduction going right now. Up to the 1,200, but and part of the concern is there's not even a 20-year plan to get through all of it to get it done, so that by the time you get back to what you've already treated for the maintenance, that if you had the maintenance afterwards, it could be about 300 an acre, but it'll be such a stretch before you get back to that you'll be back to the 1,200 route, so it'll never be cost effective.
So that's absolutely a concern that we've actually been internally talking a lot about, is how do we balance creating new slash on the ground and having that higher cost versus using tools such as underburning, which is generally cheaper. So we're actually doing a combination of that right now. A few weeks ago, we did some burning up in the Butcher Knife Slate area, and it was actually probably under $200 an acre where we treated 250 acres, under $200 an acre, as kind of a maintenance as part of that process. So I think it's a combination that's going to into the future as far as that.
I guess for me, one of the things that I really hope they assess at some point, you talked about Taylor and those not being economic to just do a harvest sale. But if we're going to be spending $1,200 an acre anyhow, is it better to get those cleared out and replanted with healthier trees and get them restored so we can get the soils protected and all that as well, and get new trees in there with this kind of a start over? We're spending $1,200 an acre on these. What's the difference if those other ones aren't productive anyhow? If we're going to spend money, what's the best outcome for getting it back into a rotation? Because this project is going to be timely and really expensive, and which is going to get us back towards a healthy forest management sooner and a more economic way. One other question. I know Lake County has the biomass, but Commissioner Mark Albertson, I think, something like that, he mentioned that they get taxed for any fuels that come off of forest lands. Is there any looking at, instead of burning, getting them over to the biofuels?
So that's always an option out there. The problem is there's no one. The cost to do that is the transportation cost to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And there needs to be a facility close by to make that feasible. And there isn't the capacity in this area to take them.
So if we got a facility, say, out in Illinois Valley to process hemp and forest biofuels.
Sure.
Could it handle it? But there's no capacity.
I don't know what. But if somebody out there wanted our small diameter material,
you would look at it.
It would be easy. It'd be, yes, you can do it. And it's from a cost, you know, what they would have to pay us, it's pretty cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Really what drives that is how close they are to a facility.
Yeah.
Because transportation costs is what kills that.
But smoke is still something that is a concern for our community. And so if there is alternates to
that's air easy. Quality. It's easy from our perspective. If somebody wanted it, we'd make that happen. Just no one wants it is the problem.
And Lake County wants it, but they get taxed if it comes off of the forest.
I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, I'll have to find out. But it was definitely something that they were like, we're in the middle of a U.S. forest. Why are we being taxed for product off a U.S. forest? And it was just...
I'm not aware of any tax that we would...
Okay. I will find out.
Yeah.
And I'll follow up with you. But I know that's something that we've been hearing kind of rumors of what is it something we could use in our area that would maybe help.
So. Lake County was going to put in some kind of refinery over there to take juniper trees, and they got a ton of them, and grind them up and make jet fuel out of them.
Where's that?
Lake County.
Interesting.
Hmm. Very interesting.
Because the junipers are what has taken up all the water in Klamath.
Well, that's what they're thinking they can do two or three different things at once. Then the grouse came in there, we call those prairie grouse, prairie chicken.
Oh, sage grouse.
Sage grouse, yeah. And they came, oh, you got to watch out for what they're doing because they eat the juniper berries.
So we have, if somebody wanted small diameter trees right now, we could make that happen.
We did a tour up Owens. He went to Stinson Forest up out of Tillamook. And they had trucks coming off of one of their clear cuts. It was a project right in the watershed to see what the effects of a clear cut is in a watershed. And the results was alarming. It was really, really positive, all positive. And they were hauling logs out, you know, and Court and I are we're riding along there. And they said, now here goes a full load of logs. And I said, those aren't logs. They're sticks.
Yeah, fence posts.
They're just stuff. They're this big around, and they call them that logging. But I guess they have a 2x2 stud mill or something right there. That's what makes it feasible. It is right over the next hill. And so they're just all short. I don't even know if they license the truck for Pete's sake.
Can't somebody make firewood out of it or something?
I said, what do you do? Don't be offended, but I'm not seeing logs. I'm seeing, you make toothpicks out of it, or matches, or chopsticks? What do you do with it? And they said, no, they make studs out of it. 2x2 studs, 2x4s, and just...
Well, and I can tell you, the studs in my house that were put in 51...
Mm-hmm. Harder than Chinese arithmetic, aren't they?
Oh, my goodness. And the ones today, you know, it's like, which direction are they going?
They all have a center in them.
Measure.
Marked on all four corners.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. All right, well, anything else, Matt?
That's kind of the main thing I wanted to chat about. So.
Great. Will you follow up with us when you hear more on this?
Absolutely.
That would be awesome. Yeah. So, and it would be nice to get a regular time for you in here.
How often do you want me to be here?
I think at least quarterly.
Okay.
You guys want more than that, or is quarterly work?
No, quarterly, unless something
on the
comes to your attention. Yeah.
Season, so you get quarterly. I don't know if we have enough information. Really, really interesting. Big pines. What your outcome is on big
so
pines? That's quite often.
Yeah, and apologize for not being here earlier. Like I said, it was.
You know, this year was actually such a blessing, and we're going to count our blessings and just go from there. And these projects to get going, hopefully, will have an impact so we don't have the fires the way we do. So, Matt, thanks for all you do.
Thank you.
Appreciate your partnership. And in all these fire meetings, it's usually Matt and I over on the side.
He's one of the heroes in this story.
Awesome. All right.
I love it.
Thank you, Commissioner.
You bet. You take care. All right. So, back to our agenda. We get our quarterly updates from a couple departments this morning. Emergency management is next. Emergency Management Services? Interesting. I was looking at, you got a new name?
I think it was Emergency Services before, and I've always called it Emergency Management. So maybe it's Emergency Management
Maybe
Services.
We define it someday.
That's okay. So we'll be doing a presentation that I'm sure Trish is just about.
Yeah,
on
my mouse would go off the screen.
Bring it back.
It's doing double screen.
There we go.
This might be the old computer out of my office that's probably rebooting. Still. I'm going to boot it.
Thanks, Trish. So I'm pretty excited this morning. We have not had an opportunity to come to the board and do a quarterly update just with the county board. The last two updates that we've done have been joint city-county. And so I think that this format allows for more questions and interaction. It's not nearly as formal. And want to make sure that you all understand what we've been up to and what is on the horizon for us. So
ours has got our background is all barnwood. Yeah. The city's like subway tile and stuff. So
yeah.
White.
No, they allow that white, bland PowerPoint. Ours looks I like it.
So just as an interesting little tidbit, we are trying out a new software for this presentation, so you're our guinea pigs. So none of us actually like PowerPoint, so we're trying something different. So if you hate it, let us know. It was a good opportunity to learn how to put
it
together. Already?
Just thought I'd say.
Well, then let me just pack up my stuff and come. So just keep that in mind as we move through. So we're going to talk a little bit about what we've done. The benchmark that we used was July 1st until now, so that you'll know what we've done the last quarter. So summer response activities, we've all mentioned already that we haven't had a summer this last summer like we did the last two summers, which was great. It gave us an opportunity to get some other things done, some of which we didn't know was coming. But as Matt and I were just laughing about, what's hard to explain is that not having those kinds of fires doesn't relieve any of the anxiety that it's right around the corner. And so just because there's nothing actively burning doesn't mean you can go home, have a drink, sit by the pool, and relax. It's always every single phone call could be that next big fire. So it's a little bit of PTSD, I think, for everybody involved. That photo there is the Panther Gulch fire. But that was thankfully one of the biggest fires we had this summer. Everything else besides Milepost 97 that was in Douglas County was kept pretty well in check. However, we did have some opportunities to come up with some things in preparation for fire season, one of which was the evacuation application. One of the blessings that we have, Emily, the assistant emergency manager, has GIS skills. In her previous life, she was a GIS technician, and so she has some abilities to go in and create some tools for us that are pretty helpful, one of which is this evacuation application that can be used by volunteers. bless you. That can be used by volunteers as they go out and do evacuations door-to-door in neighborhoods where fire is threatening. What this does for us is, in years past, search and rescue volunteers, for example, would fill out a form and bring it back to the EOC. Typically, it would be set on a table, and we'd be so busy that there was not much we could do with it. This is a real-time system where, in the field, the volunteers can put in information, and it shows up on a map for us. And then we also have data that is in the system forever. So as we go back and look at how many questions I received after fire season from fire insurance companies asking what level people were at what times, we didn't do a very good job of keeping track of that. This will allow us to have real-time snapshots of who was evacuated when.
Do we, when insurance companies call for that data, it's just like a car wreck. When your insurance company calls and you have to fill out an accident report, the public safety can send a bill along for that, for doing that. Do we have something in place for that? Insurance companies, of course, they're looking for information for, I guess, claims or whatever. Have you looked into that?
I'm not sure how
you ask that information, it's $50 and we'll give it to you. Now that we have a product that's accurate, I can see where, we think it was about Tuesday at 10 o'clock. That's not valuable information. But when they're seeking information, then you can respond at this level.
Yeah.
With a professional report that they can use in court or wherever, I think you might look at a fee being charged for that picture.
Yeah, and I think it'll be up to the sheriff's office. They're responsible for evacuations. This is a tool that will help them. As far as I'm concerned, for emergency management, it'll help us for emergency planning in the future. But for evacuation stuff, really that's a sheriff's office responsibility, and I'll mention that to Maria and find out if they've given that any thought. The nice thing about this, We did some testing. We did an evacuation drill out in the Illinois Valley, and the volunteers used this and the paper, and they actually like this better. It's a lot quicker and a lot more efficient for them. We've made it so that it can be used for Jackson, Josephine, and Douglas County volunteers. So the Douglas County volunteers got to use it in the Milepost 97 fire, which was pretty handy. So the other thing that we worked on this year, Jackson County created an ArcGIS information dashboard, and we all met throughout the summer and collaborated on how we were going to share information better this year than in years past. And this is a tool that we have in our toolbox where we can input that geographic data and share information about how many personnel and resources are on scene of each fire. We didn't get to use it this year because we didn't have any large fires, but it is it's a tool in the toolbox, and I would much rather tell you that we didn't have any data to show you simply because we didn't have any large fires. So this is also for Jackson and Josephine County. One of the things that we got to do this year instead of fires was plan for public safety power shutoffs. You guys have been involved in a lot of the discussions with my office staff and Pacific Power as well as the public. In May 17th, we were notified of the potential of PSPS events in our region. We had our first partner meeting on May 23rd, and the plan was put into effect on June 1st. We spent the rest of the summer really planning on how we were going to manage the information as well as response to PSPS events. We have a great working relationship with our local Pacific Power representatives and have spent an enormous amount of time with them throughout the summer. And we will continue to work through the winter with them as well.
They're not interested, and I brought it up a half a dozen times, that they should have some sort of a generator program through the power company if they're going to shut. Because the big thing is, hey, you're shutting my well off, you're shutting my freezer off, I've got a person on oxygen, blah, blah, blah. We don't care. That's up to you. If they're not going to do it, would we be smart to have a list of contractors that people could contact and say, you know what, here's a list of qualified contractors for backup generators or something of that sort, some information on what a backup generator does.
So my next, my next slide is going to talk a little bit about some of the public education and outreach pieces that we've done and generator safety.
Because I don't want somebody just taking a 10 kW generator and plugging it into their power panel because it backfeeds the system.
Yes.
And anybody that's working on the system is going to get knocked off the ladder. So, you know, there's more to a generator set at a house than just plugging it into the one in the motorhome.
Yeah, absolutely.
And backfeeding your system.
And we've heard a lot of feedback about that as well. And we're going to let Ricky talk just a little bit about some of the outreach. I think a list of qualified generator installers, providers is not a bad idea.
We can provide that list and that information. That at least says that, you know, hey, instead of saying, well, too bad, you know, you bought the country, so that you just get to do it. This guy here could probably tell you a whole heck of a lot about it and how it works. But I just didn't know if the county, from your standpoint, when somebody says, well, they're going to shut my power, just say, you know, this is something you might want to look at in the off season.
Yeah. One of the things that I saw last week, I had an opportunity to go down to California and witness their PSPS events, and they had 36 of 58 counties affected, complete counties shut off, and you couldn't get your hands on a generator.
No.
However, they've known about it for 2 years in California, and many of the individuals chose not to purchase generators in the off season. And when the power went off, they all rushed down to Harbor Freight, and it became a huge disaster. But
one of the things you're going to have to look at on the spinoff of that, and I don't mean to get back to it and harbor the issue, but then you're going to get, oh, you can't run an internal combustion engine during fire season. You know, it's got to be okay, but a generator, a listed, UL-listed generator with a UL-listed spark arrestor is exempt, that you can do that for your home during power shutoff time.
It was definitely one of the concerns that we brought up to Pacific Power was if you shut off, having power shut off in the summer is a lot different than having power shut off in the winter. And if you're turning off power to prevent a forest fire from starting, but then you have everybody pulling out their old generators, dusting them off, putting them in tall grass, and starting them up. That could be another right. hazard as well.
And then you're also telling them, hey, your well doesn't work, and you can't protect your own home.
Correct.
There would be some issue if I lived in rural America.
Yes. We've been working real hard this summer on identifying critical infrastructure, not just county and city and water and sewer type infrastructure, but also critical infrastructure as it relates to power generation. So people who rely on power for life safety, whether they have CPAP machines or oxygen or otherwise. So we're going to be working throughout the entire winter trying to identify those facilities and trying to get them prepared for this kind of an event.
And so, locating vulnerable population.
Yeah. It's right. a huge undertaking.
We want to make sure that the hemp dryers are all still powered up where they need to be.
Hard time when the power's on. So we had a lot of public engagement throughout the summer as it related to PSPS events. Some of the presentations, we hosted an open house in Cave Junction and in Grants Pass. We also had our local Pacific Power folks do presentations in Merlin and Cave Junction specifically. And Commissioner Morgan and I had an opportunity to go speak to the Oregon State legislators, specifically the House Energy and Environmental Committee, as well as the Governor's Fire Council, on our experience with PSPS. Currently in Oregon, PSPS is only affecting four specific counties, Jackson, Josephine, Douglas, and Hood River County. So it's a small area of that's affected. The drawback to that is that really the state, Oregon Emergency Management, isn't really very interested in helping us through the process of planning for a PSPS because there's only four counties affected. It leaves the four of us counties to kind of blaze the trail, if you will, of how we're going to handle those types of events. So it's been a heavy load on us. I would assume that it's not very long until the entire state jumps on board and is looking at some sort of legislation like California. And then the rest of the state will get to use the tools we've created. So if you want to talk a little bit about the public education stuff that you've done as it relates to PSPS.
Yeah, so one of the things we talked about was kind of what you were talking about generator use and people using alternative methods of cooking and firing up their barbecue next to their house under their eaves and starting fires in that way. So we thought we would meet with those local organizations or businesses that could help prevent some of those accidents just through simple education. So we met with Jason Kennedy and had him talk about backup water, because that's a big concern for people during shutdowns with wells and things like that. And we went along and did the fire rescue. Tim Stacey did a video for us on barbecue safety and propane use and that type of a thing. Quinn's Well Service, they talked about pumps and how to restore water once power is turned back on because of the scheduled maintenance outage that they did in Merlin. They had a lot of people call after that because they weren't getting water back to their home. And the power company told them that was a well issue, not a power issue. And it was just a simple something that they didn't know how to do with their well, with their switch. So we put this little video together so they would understand how to restore water back to their homes. And then we met with Lewis Power Equipment and did a video on generator safety and generator use. So that is part of our public outreach. When I do meetings with people, we do talk about generator safety and where you can run it, how you can run it, where you can store it, not putting fuel in it, letting it sit for 5 years, not putting it in your garage that's connected to your house and shutting the garage and turning it on and that type of a thing. So we are trying to educate the public as far as things to avoid or things to consider when even when they're making those purchases, so they're not backfeeding systems or burning up their television because they thought they could just go get a generator and plug it into their house and run everything and cause, you know, personal problems and problems for the system.
Ricky, can I ask a question?
Yes.
City has access, we may, to the public access channel. It might be worth asking if we can get this on there.
Okay.
And just have them rotating when there's dead time or they need to fill space. I don't know who it is, but since the city has different access than we have access, but it would probably be worth talking to John McCafferty on our end and whoever on the city to see if we can get that shared regionally so people don't know to go to the website, they can be seeing it.
Yeah, so we have them on our RVEM website, which is kind of where we funnel everything preparedness for both counties. And then we also have them on Facebook, and we have them on YouTube. But if you don't know to go look for them on YouTube, you're not accidentally stumbling upon one of these videos. It's really going to have to be through our website, but we haven't put them anywhere else. But the great thing about Facebook is it's measurable. You can see how many people it has reached, but then you can also see how many people have actually engaged with the video. So you're getting real numbers instead of, you know, potentially we're reaching this many thousand people. Well, that doesn't really mean anything. It just means that it could have reached them, but that engagement number has been good to see.
And these are pretty short videos. They're about two and a half minutes
yeah,
long.
They're not long.
It's been an interesting learning curve for Ricky, which she got a new setup for filming and then new software for editing, filming, and
it's been gigantic learning curve.
Super fun. But she got it pulled together, and we got some useful stuff up on the website. So the other thing that was created because of this PSPS planning process was another survey in ArcGIS that Emily created, was a survey that we were able to send out to our critical infrastructure partners. We have in the past identified where and who our critical infrastructure was, but we didn't have answers on what their reliance on power was or what their emergency power generation capabilities were. Pacific Power has asked us to obtain that information and share it with them. The hope is that they can identify those critical infrastructure locations and then either reroute de-energization zones around those locations and or prioritize the re-energization to those locations. So this was a huge lift for us to get that information from our critical infrastructure partners. Again, we have just barely touched the surface on the medically dependent locations, but I think now we've got a solid database for our critical infrastructure in the county, and it was done through this ArcGIS survey, which then geographically plots them on a map.
The original maps didn't show, they said, you know, they were going to skip all around Grants Pass mm-hmm. and not Grants Pass.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say, okay, I'm going to shut off all the power out here, is any thought given to the migration of people saying, that's fine, I'm going to Grants Pass? And we're all going to be, we could double our population in a matter of hours. Do we have any plans for that if that were to happen? No.
I don't think that we have addressed that specifically.
It's just something that came to mind because as I know that you're talking critical places mm-hmm. and Grants Pass was just left off of that because I think Commissioner Fowler said, well, you know, look, if you look at the map, it doesn't look like Grants Pass proper is going to be effective.
Yeah. What we have talked with Pacific Power about is potentially having pop-up response areas, that kind of like a tent for power and air quality and stuff like that in areas near vulnerable or critical infrastructure, so that it wouldn't be that everybody's coming to Grants Pass unless they chose to do that. That their Red Cross will not provide shelters for intentional power shutoffs. So we've put back on Pacific Power that they need to provide those safety shelters. And so they're identifying locations to put those shelters so that people can respond to them and maybe plug in a cell phone and plug in oxygen or something like that. So that's how we've been dealing with it in those terms. If Grants Pass has power, it is people can come and get motels or do what they want, but there is no sheltering that we would offer. We're trying to put it back on Pacific Power to be planning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
And they do have a contract with a vendor who will provide that resource center for them. And we just met last week with Pacific Power. We pre-identified some locations. Pacific Power is now working on MOUs or contracts with those locations to try to get some agreements in place ahead of time for putting up those resource centers. Also, last week when I went to California, I was able to visit one of the PG&E resource centers in Sonoma County. Took a lot of pictures, got a lot of information, sharing that with Pacific Power. Again, trying to learn from California's experience first and bring it back home so we can benefit from what they do first. So,
I mean, they had 80,000 communities shut off. I mean, cities, townships.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and you'll notice that Paradise is this next week, the one-year anniversary of Paradise, where a town similar to Grants Pass population. If you have Netflix, there's a show on there right now about the Paradise fires that might be just interesting for you to watch.
Amazing.
But they've said that they'll do it by the critical locations, but what you find is when power shuts off, what's the effect on... We don't know what it'll actually be until we get here.
Pam's 90-year-old aunt, we went to her birthday party 2 weeks ago, and she's paradise. Mm-hmm. And she's 88 years old. She went out and got in her car and outran that fire. And when her and her kids went back to go through the ashes, she got about... She'd go through and pick up one thing, so, oh, look, this is that, you know, and then, oh, look, this is that, and about, she went there 15 minutes, threw it all back in the pile and said, I want to get out of here. That chapter of my life is shut, and I don't want to open it again. I said, you didn't mine that to find your jewelry? All the gold from your jewelry and your silver coins and stuff is still in that pile of rubble. I'd have been mining that. I would have. I'm serious. How much stuff was left behind?
A lot of stuff.
Silver, for silver cookware and stuff. It all melted into an ingot. But just, why are we not mining that?
Brittany, I heard a presentation like that.
You don't think the salvage people aren't doing that?
Oh, I'm sure they will. But it seems it's easier for people mentally to just go, I just need to let it all go.
It was all in the past. I'm done with it, so I'm out of here. Take me away, and I don't ever want to go back.
Right.
And she's a hardy 90-year-old. I wouldn't have known if I died.
Good for her. That's impressive. We've 90? Heard some terrible stories, sad stories about people, elderly people, trying to get out of that situation, getting out of their cars, and physically not able to get up the hill that they were trying to walk out, you know, and having to be picked up by people. So anyway, so as far as education and outreach goes, we started a campaign called Get Ready Rogue. That's kind of the driving name behind all of our outreach efforts. And there are several approaches to that Get Ready Rogue effort, one of them being RVEM. So I'm going to go to the website first. This website is a dual county website, and it's existed for a long time, but it was really...
Sad.
Yeah, it was sad. There was no depth to it. It was a static page. You could, you know, go and get a couple pieces of information, you know, county contact information, boards and things like that, but really nothing else. So I spent quite a bit of time making this website something that was useful. So we're able to drive a lot of people toward this website in both counties. We have people sign up through Citizen Alert. That's the number one thing that we mention. Every single meeting we talk about people being in Citizen Alert and helping them to understand how that would assist them, but also explaining some of the limitations and that we wouldn't need to use that program in a Cascadia event. And I talk about Cascadia with everyone I meet with, because my thinking is if you're ready for Cascadia, you're ready for all of the smaller events. But letting them know that's not a system that would be in place during that event, because we'll all know at the same time. Nobody needs an alert to tell them.
Updated our county logo.
No, we were given a logo and then it was taken back. And I haven't received the new. Okay, so just yesterday. So we'll get that changed out. We're trying to
Thursday. It's coming to us Thursday's agenda for approval for the county employees to use the logo.
So that will happen. We really like the logo.
We just haven't changed it on the website.
But we really like our logo, this Get Ready Rogue, that just depicts the different disasters that we'll face in the county. So Get Ready Rogue is where we focused most of our attention. And when you go into that page, it looks like this, which is really cool that you can click on any event you're interested in learning about, including the power outages was a big place for people. Fire, of course, is another big one. But that prepare page, everything you would need, you can find all kinds of resources. It's like a funnel. You get into that little space and it disseminates. You go right back out to all of these places that are actually providing it. We don't really need to provide all that information ourselves. We need to direct people to the people that have all the information. So that's what the site has been mainly used for. And it's gone well and it's living. It's a constantly changing document. So if ever you see anything that you feel like would be a good resource for people, send it over and I'll add it in. Outside of the website, you put little pictures in for me. I haven't seen these pictures, though. So PrepU has been a fantastic way to reach the community and really help people through the process. So when I do my presentations, it can be a little overwhelming, and people receive it very differently. Some of them are, I got everything, and I think I'm good, and some people have a tear, and they're deeply concerned, and some people feel like, we can't do anything, so just do nothing. That's going to be my answer. But for those people who feel like they want to do something and don't know what to do, we take them through PrepU. We offer PrepU to them. those classes have been very well received. At this point, this current class that we're in the middle of has 55 students in it, which is quite a bit bigger than any of the classes that we've had. And we find that we'll have 55 people sign up, and then 40 will show up the first night, 35 the second, and we'll get down to, you know, 20, 25 people, and it'll kind of ebb and flow from there. But this has been a class that hasn't dropped in numbers. We've had
gained in numbers
every day or every week. We've had people add to the class, which I think is good, because if we give them 2 weeks, it's better than giving them nothing. So allowing people to jump in at some point has been successful. But they are learning a wide range of skills. We're actually doing the skill building activities. So they're learning to use a fire extinguisher before the kitchen is on fire, and they're learning to purify water and filtering water. And we've given them some really neat classes beyond that that have, we're skipping right to this one, so I'll tell you about them. I think they're in the next slide. But they're comprehensive classes, things that are well beyond what I understand, but we bring people in that are amazing in the area of water purification and filtration and location. You don't really think about needing to find water when you live by this many water sources, but if you're not near one and it's critical that you get to one, they teach you how to find it, and they teach you everything you need to know. It's a six-hour class, and it's really cool, along with a medical class, which I'll talk about in a minute. Oh, we skipped right over that one. So as a result of our PrepU class, we had one of the BLM safety managers. Actually, he is the BLM safety officer. He was in our PrepU, and he asked that we come and start doing presentations to BLM staff. So I did an all-staff presentation, general preparedness presentation, and then he asked if I would come back and do like a half-day PrepU. He said, you can have a whole day. We'll pay our staff to go, and we just want you to come and teach everything. Well, PrepU is a seven-week series, and they were wanting it in a day. So we thought, well, that's not really possible, but we can distill it down to the most important things and do a presentation for your folks that are willing to come. And it was actually great. It was a great way to get really good information into people's hands and give them a starting point for preparedness. And if they would like to do a spinoff, the only problem with PrepU is it's only in our county. So we've got people from other counties. That's a long way to go for a couple hours on a Monday night. But we are seeing these types of requests come in now to do preparedness beyond that initial mindset, which is what that public presentation is for, just to make you think about what we face and then develop it into something like this.
And she's done two of those BLM half days so far.
Yes, and they would like to do one every 6 months for their Grants Pass and Medford office, which is a big undertaking. It's a lot to get all that together and get out to them, but it's really helping people. So this was one of the gals with our Go Kits. She was in one of our PrepU BLM classes, and she ended up putting her own kit together and sending pictures through, which was just a product of that class. And what I love about it is you've got people that are coming and learning and going out and actually creating kits, and that's part of our PrepU. They bring their kit that they've built over that seven-week period, and they display everything, and people take notes on, I need to get one of those for my kit, and they're building family kits, and they're building 2 weeks ready kit, which is what the state standard is, so they're meeting those goals. Our Go Kit sales, we've sold 94 one-person and 96 two-person kits to date. And again, what I like about that is that two-person kit, it's not just for the 96 people. They're doubling numbers, and they're giving them as gifts to family members, which is really awesome. So we're enjoying that program. It's been going well. Public presentations, as I said, I do the public outreach portion of it. It's meeting with neighborhoods that just get together and want to take care of their little group. Neighborhood watch groups and churches. Rotary has been a great one. And the radio outreach. I don't know how many people were reaching over the radio. Again, it's a potential number, but not an exact number. But those radio interviews have gone well, and we've had people contact us as a result of those. The social media video posts, those have been fantastic as well. And we get a lot of comments and people coming to our classes and contacting us for kits as a result of that. And, of course, every 2 weeks we do the new hire presentation, so we're slowly chipping away at county employees. We would love to see it be something more than that, where departments are bringing us in to talk to their employees and first responders. That's just become an issue. We had a gal at our public safety fair come and ask, why is it that the people that are in public safety don't know that you offer a presentation to the public? I asked all of the groups at the public safety fair, and nobody could direct me to you. So we had a conversation about that at the emergency management board, and we're going to try to implement outreach for the families of first responders, making the first responder available, whereas they wouldn't necessarily be if their family's not ready. They're not going to be excited about running off to make sure that everyone else is being taken care of. So that's the preparedness outreach in a nutshell.
So some of the other planning activities that we've done in the last quarter, we've managed to update the two-county community wildfire protection plan, which was just signed last week. Thank you very much. We had to do a capability assessment and a national incident management system survey for Oregon Emergency Management. We've participated in updating the Illinois Valley Medical Plan. We've updated the Joint Information Center Operations Plan. We are still chipping away at the City and County Continuity of Operations Planning Project. That has been a huge undertaking, and Emily is spending much of her time meeting one-on-one with department heads and trying to get that accomplished. We've met with numerous times with the new ADA compliance officer here at the county and are trying to make sure that all of our outreach, all of our facilities, all of our planning is meeting ADA compliance. We're working on a new project, county communications coordination with stakeholders from Josephine County as well as the city, and trying to make sure that everybody is understanding exactly what resources exist and that we're all moving forward in the same direction. And also working with American Red Cross to update the current MOUs with the county and agreements for where they're going to park their disaster trailer. So plenty of planning projects in the works. Some additional training and exercise participation by our staff. We participated in the shakeout this year and helped other departments also participate in the shakeout. That is a picture of the commissioners under this table. I appreciate that. Thank you so very much. Emily participated in an animal evacuation training, trailer loading 101, with Southern Oregon Emergency Aid, who is a volunteer group we use for animal evacuations. We participated in an almost all-day ICS 402 for elected officials with the City of Grants Pass. We participated in an all-day Asante mass casualty incident drill, and Emily and I attended the Oregon Emergency Management Association annual conference and also participated in the National Weather Service tabletop exercise. So it's been a very busy quarter for sure. Grants received this quarter $34,500 in Homeland Security grants. Those were signed last week as well. Thank you very much. Hospital Preparedness Program, we have $30,356. We'll receive a generator from the State Preparedness Equipment Program, as well as $22,660 that will be passed through to ODF for the pre-disaster mitigation Onion Mountain Fire Detection Camera System. Just regular meetings that we attend, Rogue Valley Fire Chiefs, Fire Prevention Cooperative, community organizations active in disaster, monthly manager meetings, the monthly state emergency management updates and quarterly emergency management board meetings. Those have been incredibly successful. And just last meeting, one of the people that were walking out of the emergency management board meeting says, "I cannot believe people still come to these meetings." We have great participation from all of the first responders in the county, and it's a great place to share information. So
it's voluntary. It's not anything other than just saying, "We're going to have this meeting. Please come if you like." And it's a packed room.
And they do. Every single time they come.
The hospitals, the schools, everybody.
So that's exciting.
Are donuts provided?
No, we don't have to provide snacks. It's the weirdest thing. Oops. They come because they want to. So we'll keep hosting and hope that everybody shows up.
It's Ricky's cookies and you know it.
No, she hasn't made any cookies. Yeah. It's great. So some other stuff that we've done this quarter, we hosted the District 5 ARES meeting, coordinated City Firewise coordinator through a Title III contract with Josephine County. We interviewed for that position as well as the Public Health Emergency Preparedness Coordinator that starts next week. We're super excited about that. We're starting a research project for project management software for our internal team. We have a whole lot of projects going, and we're struggling to find the right tool to track
all of our... Let us know what you find, because that's something we've talked about the last couple years, too. Remember, Ricky?
I told him about Podio, so you might have to give that a try.
Yeah. So we have a list of things that we're going through, that, and we just have not been successful yet. Whiteboards and spreadsheets are not cutting it for us. So
I found one, too. Maybe we can talk
about
okay.
Okay, would love that. And Larry allowed us to make a presentation to airport managers at their annual conference as well. Ricky and Emily have been on KXCJ. We've all had an opportunity to be on KJO. One of the other cool things that we did was we moved that large Connex container that you see there in the bottom right-hand corner. We moved that to our facility on Tech Way. We have completely filled it up with equipment and supplies. We've made our County Emergency Operations Center 2 weeks ready for 10 staff. So we have all of the supplies that at least 10 people would need to survive and be comfortable, thank you to Ricky, with supplies for 2 weeks. So,
how long does that shelf life go in that container?
Sure. Everything has a different life expectancy. So we've got, Ricky's got it on a rotation
plan.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we'll replace things as they expire. One of the goals was to make sure that we bought stuff that didn't expire in a couple of months. So we're trying our best to get the most shelf life out of what we have. We'll be working with the city over the next quarter to try to do the same thing for them in their new facility.
That Connex container is completely insulated, so yeah. It stays cool during the summer, the heat of the summer. And in fact, it's downright cold, though, in the winter, but it does protect it from the heat, so it's safe out there.
Yep. Some of the things that are coming up in the next quarter, we're going to continue planning for PSPS. Ricky's going to hopefully be able to work on the next level of preparedness presentations. We're going to hopefully finalize our county and city continuity of operations plans. We're looking to contract with Ecology and Environment to help us through part of the process with our update to our EOPs, both city and county. Work on staff preparedness, as Ricky mentioned. We are going to be doing a continuity of operations plan exercise with city staff next week. We're going to be hosting a debris management class for both counties, presented by the University of Hawaii. Also, one of the grant purchases.
Sure, you don't want to go there.
I know.
Yes,
that's everybody's
there.
Comment.
Training?
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. One of the grants we received will allow us to find a contractor to host the Emergency Operations Center training, and that will be coming up in the first few months of next year for all city and county staff. We will be participating in a Rogue Community College tabletop exercise. Some other stuff is applying for the Homeland Security Grant, hopefully working with Jackson County in hiring a fire plan coordinator, a shared cost between Jackson and Josephine. We're looking for ways to make Ricky's position full-time. She was full-time when she started and went down to half-time at the beginning of the year, but we are finding that there are far more requests and a much higher need for outreach and education than 20 hours a week is allowing. She's now gotten to the point where she's either having to schedule presentations way far in advance or tell people no, which is not in a position that we had hoped to be in. So we're looking for creative ways to try to fund that position, one of which might be sharing her position cost with Jackson County. So
that means the time cost would also be shared with Jackson County.
Yes. Indeed. Yeah. So it won't really solve our time crunch here, but it will help alleviate some of the issues that we have with trying to share the preparedness message across the county line. So be prepared to have some sort of presentation about that in the very near future. Make all the grant purchases from the grants we've received. Working on the Fire District Committee, City and County EOC preparedness, be 2 weeks ready, as I mentioned before. We'll be working very closely with the Public Health Emergency Preparedness Coordinator that starts next week. Mike Weber is going to share her with us, and we'll be working on projects together, which will be pretty exciting. Updating the Family Emergency Preparedness Handbook. We are going to start a city CERT team. Warren Hensman has promised that as soon as the fire district measure is over with and their new public safety building is finished, that he'll allow me to help him establish a city CERT team. We have people waiting for that to start. And then working with Ivy Frog and Smile Ivy events in the next couple of weeks. There you go.
That's it. Thank you.
That's it. You're very welcome. Any questions?
I had one from the middle somewhere. As far as your videos, to prepare people, do you guys have one on how to access water from your water heater?
Because we haven't done a video on that.
Camera could show you in the same 3 or 4 minutes
right.
how to get your water out of there, because there's 40 gallons in most people's house that's clean and
right.
stationary.
That's actually a great idea. I don't think we talked about that.
We've talked about creative ways to get to water.
Yes.
Quinn's addressed some of that, but we haven't shown that. Did you say you wanted to do that?
No.
He's not a plumber. He's an electrician.
Well, I have had to do it because I'm an electrician, but we hate doing it.
And in with that, you need to show people how a toilet works. Because they
how a toilet
you get
works?
One flush, and then you don't get any more flushes after that. But there, you know how many people don't understand? You take the top off and go out and get water out of the creek and put it into
So I did cover that in the well video. We did talk about filling your tank or even doing it like you do in a third world country, and you throw it into the bowl, and it will flush, just like that. So we did talk about water in that way.
You keep it sanitary. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the one that that we're missing for sure is an actual plumber. We talked about that. We've just run out of time. I mean, this has been the issue. So,
and not a lot of people want to be on camera.
It's it's odd
to record.
It is very many people to be filmed talking about that kind of stuff. So,
but even Jason Kennedy might be able to produce that.
Right, and he was great. He did it. He's fantastic for the videos.
Friend of mine has a house in Riverside, and you're not allowed to catch your rainwater water. Mm-hmm. Because water all belongs to the state as it does in Oregon.
Yeah.
So you have some eggs, but he has a cistern out behind his house.
Don't give his address.
For emergency purposes.
Camouflage is an old water tower for a railroad trestle and stuff like that. But anyway, he saves all his water.
Gotta be creative.
And of course, when the fires came through Riverside, he had water when nobody else did.
Yeah.
He had lots of water that he could use to protect his own property.
Right.
Do you know how much water you're supposed to have for your household if, say, there's an outage and things are going
on? I would guess a gallon per person per day.
And pet.
Yep. Luckily, we have none.
You're
so
lucky.
We're not sharing creatures anyway.
It's dirty, dirty animals. So.
But I would, I mean, please keep in mind that this started... going to those community fire meetings and telling people they're on evacuation status. How many people said, I don't know what to do. I don't even know what the first step is. I'm overwhelmed. The thought of it, I can't handle. What do I do? Take a breath. Let's start you here. Let's make a list. Let's, you know, just talking people through. And the idea is we're not going to respond for everybody. So we're providing public safety by instilling resilience in our own people, that they can take care of themselves. If they're taking care of their anxieties down, they're going to be able to respond in a disaster easier than freaking out if I don't know what to do. But at 20 hours a week, we can't meet the need. It's that big, but we're trying to make sure our whole county is where they need to. Our first week in office in 2017, we had such an extreme snow event that we didn't get sworn in for several days. So... And
but we weren't on call either.
Yeah, there was one commissioner officially. I mean, anyhow, it was one of those things that there were people without power and people didn't get to them for a couple weeks. And so again, getting people 2 weeks ready on their own. But we've gotten a little pushback from some of our internal departments on providing help on how to look at options, so it really will be our decision to set the priority. And so there's a lot of asks coming our way from different departments, and we kind of need to have that bigger discussion. So just as a heads up to be thinking about.
So I want to add to that. Some of the stuff that we talked about when I first started the position was, Dan, I know you said go out there and learn everything they do. That could not happen. The positions never existed before, so entering into it, it was just cracking it wide open and going right out into the public, which was wonderful, and it's been fantastic. I have not had to do much in the way of outreach. I sent out one email to the Church of the Valley because it could be broadcast through them to all of the churches that participate in that group. I think there are 30-something churches that are a part of it. It could be off on that number, but it's quite a few churches. That was my singular effort as far as churches go. And I've been working from that effort through this whole time. Same thing with the schools. I called maybe half the schools personally, met with some of them, and I'm kind of glad that it stopped where it has because I can't do it. I just don't have the hours to do it. I cannot grow what we're doing right now anymore. It would at least mean that I couldn't do anything well, and
when
that would be
terrible.
When you
started your position, my anticipation was that you make it into something, because you're the person that could make it into something and make it successful. You're there. Mm-hmm. So now it's time to take the next step, which is fund you for full time.
Right. And we'd love to do that. And what is great is I'm not having to do any reaching out. Now people are calling in. We need a presentation. Can you come and meet with this group of people? And it grows from there. It's really been great.
I don't think I want to try to split it with Jackson County. I'd rather you be attached to Josephine County, but offer your services to Jackson for just, I can do this thing here for you. I'll do a presentation for $175 or $200 to strengthen your program.
Right.
I mean, they pay consultants and people to come in and talk and motivational speakers all the time. You should be no different.
Right. And I hate to tell them no. You know, BLM, I'm sorry, you're in Medford, so I can't come talk to your people. It's just we live in dual county in this, so, you know, we work in.
Is there an ask from the city and county that could bolster that position even temporarily to get all this information out for a couple, 3 years? Or?
What's your budget look like?
Well, the position was never budgeted.
No,
we chose to take it out of general fund to fund the position as a public safety ask. And because it was such a need. There's no budget in the state emergency operations for this. And the second position was funded through that three-year grant with, not grant, but that IGA with city. Mm-hmm. So this position has always been on us, and it's our priority of how do we fund it. General fund. And
but it's an outcome of that program as well.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. But it was because we said we wanted to support it and fund. And so it's, as far as budget goes, it was us saying we will fund. Right. It was never in the budget. I mean, we put it in the budget because we said we'd fund it. So anything is us deciding how general funds are used. And they can continue to look for grants, but it's on us. So
like,
either forestry
like
or
let's get us an ask.
It's 51,000 increase a year,
Right? Which I think you could ask the city and the county, because they already have a contract. But we'll say, hey, here's the need. Here's what's happening. Do you guys want to have more inside the city of Grants Pass presentations or not? And then we could stay outside
of
that.
The hard part with that is if they said no, it would be very difficult to track where presentations
where
are
going.
Do people work in the city and live in the county or work in the county? I mean, it's already very difficult to separate Jackson and Josephine.
Yeah.
If we had to do that with her presentations with city and county, it'd be very, very difficult.
Well, and it's at what point do you charge for the information to an agency like BLM that has a budget for training and exercise versus just saying it's a priority to our citizens versus an outside agency.
They're still citizens.
Yeah, and they may live here, work there, so that's a hard one. City was not an easy ask for that three-year IGA. Matter of fact, the one specific person at the time that was leading the conversation against them providing money for this stated, well, the city has to carry the backs of the county all the time. And one of the things I've come back with is, this is something we offered in addition to what you're getting more than what you're paying for. And you may provide us detectives for major emergencies. We're providing preparedness for all your citizens.
And we'll quit collecting your taxes. You just take upon yourself. Let's say you like that one time.
Yeah. Well, so, and for time's sake, we do need to be mindful of the time. So I wanted you guys, I asked her to bring it up. She's been talking with me quite a while about this. And the support that she's gotten from our internal departments has been very lacking. So it was one of those things I said, we need to bring it here. And so it's one of those things that, to me, this is public safety. Because we can provide more with empowering the people to do more than we can with having some other position. We're kind of like the Go Kits. They're spreading to more people than just the one individually things. We're actively doing something that will save lives down the line. And that's preparedness is cheaper than response. Mm-hmm. and that's what we're focusing on. So
well, sure. Even the personal, so when I just feel like this is important for people to understand, and I tell everybody in our meetings, you're more likely to have a personal emergency than you are a catastrophic one, but at least they're prepared when they're broken down on the side of the road and it doesn't result in calling 911. They're okay to sit in their car with their kit, and they can call a family member or the tow truck that's not going to be there for 8 hours, but it doesn't leave them in a situation where they would be in danger. So they're starting to think along those lines of just taking care of themselves on an everyday basis instead of, you know, leaving it to somebody else to deal right. with.
One of my important things was I wanted to, before I came to you with an ask, I wanted to be able to present to you what we've been doing. We haven't had a chance to do that with just you and have an in-depth conversation about the impact that that Ricky's made throughout the community. And I think that people talk about her all the time in her presentations, and I think she's doing an incredible job. We're just limited. And I didn't want to come to you and ask for more until we had an opportunity today to show you some of the things that we've been doing. So
sure.
I wanted to make sure it was in order, to be fair. So.
Well, and then just a quick question on, let's say we have a Douglas County event where there's lots of power lines down, snow on the ground, roads closed. What do the commissioners do? What does the chair do?
That is a whole another conversation that I promise to have with you soon.
Okay.
We do need to have that conversation.
Yes, absolutely.
Because I spent 10 years over at the city and asked that question once a year and never did get the final answer.
If yes.
Chris, what am I supposed to do?
Chris Boyce and Tim Freeman, they each grabbed chainsaws and their jeeps, and they cleared roads individually.
So was Dandy Young.
Right.
No, but literally, that's what they found to be the... They were out there helping in the response team, but it is something that... I know we have to talk about the COOP at some point, the continuity of operations plan, but...
Mm-hmm. And the declarations and those things that I've seen go by, but still don't have a full understanding.
But what is the
happens.
Practical response of where would we best serve? Is it passing out water? Is it responding door to door? I think that we should have those conversations.
Sounds like we're gonna.
We are.
Okay.
Yeah, it's gonna happen.
Super.
Thank you both.
Thank you guys.
Thanks, you guys.
Well done.
Good to see you. Looks good. See your smiling face.
Up next is our airport quarterly update.
Our patient director.
You said yeah. There you go.
Did you wake up Larry and run by?
Start your morning off?
Goodness gracious. Okay, knees, let's get down here,
Get circulation back in the old sticks, huh?
Yeah.
I'm going to recommend the next part when we get there that we table to this afternoon's meeting because the agenda this afternoon is not very long.
Sure.
And so that we can...
What else are you going to table now?
You're moving number four to afternoon.
Number four?
Yeah.
I apologize, sir. I did this at midnight, and I forgot to email it to you all so that you'd have it.
Oh, I didn't get it. I was looking for it this morning.
No.
That's when I got
frantic. Dan was frantic.
All right, well, I'm brushing my teeth, and I thought, where's the airport report?
Oh, sorry.
Right. Now my evil plan is to just spring this on you at the last moment and have you stunned into silence. Goodness. Well, good morning.
Morning.
So I have this different technology for my presentation. So ink on paper.
Pen and paper?
Yep. But
classic.
I apologize. I'm going to slip out for 2 minutes, and I'll be right back.
No worries. Okay.
What does CORE stand for?
CORE stands for Critical Oregon Airport Resource. And there was a bill that took effect 2 years ago, that established a fund based on fuel taxes, aviation fuel taxes. So 2 cents a gallon on jet fuel, 2 cents a gallon on piston fuel, gasoline. Uh-huh. And all of that money is dedicated for aviation in Oregon. Uh-huh. And so it's called the ASAP program, and they established
it. Doesn't go by dispensing in your county. It all goes into a big pot, and then you requisition out of that pot.
You beg for money out of the welfare
system. If you sold 80% of the fuel through this airport out there, everybody else benefits, and you don't get your 80%, you get the 2% of
that. That would be Portland's complaint, yes.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, Portland, Eugene, Salem,
Medford.
Medford, yeah. Those are really the four places in the state. There's, you know, Redmond has some scheduled service, and there's a few airliners that go into Pendleton, and, you know, but I mean, Klamath Falls lost theirs, and they can't get it back now, even with an airliner that wants to go in there. They can't because TSA pulled out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What's the A stand for again, sir?
Airports.
Critical Oregon Airport.
Yep, Airports Resource. So this fund gathers in about $6 or $7 million a year, and it's divided into three pots. One goes to the State Aviation Board to run the state airports. The other, that's called the SOAR program. Then the CORE program is about one-third of the money, and that is set aside for airports like ours for three priorities. Number one priority is grant match. So when I get a federal grant, an AIP grant, I can apply for a CORE grant to pay 90% of my match requirement. And that's where, say, on a $1.5 million federal grant, okay, we have an obligation to pay $150,000. That's our 10% match. And the CORE program will pay 90% of that. So we're basically leveraging 100 to 1, yeah, our own money. That's the perfect, that's because the CORE grants are maxed out at $150,000 each. That's the sweet spot right there. That's the most return on your buck, the best leverage. Put in four applications, a total of about $460,000. We have a runway reconstruction project coming up next year at Illinois Valley Airport. All 5,000 feet will be resurfaced, and that's going to be about, yes.
Keep going, but I have a question about that.
$4.2 million for that construction project.
Not redo, but resurface?
Well, I mean, they're going to dig it out as far as they need to in order to remove.
Oh, do substrate? And
yes. Oh. There may be some areas where they put in three-quarter minus and compact to 100%, et cetera, before they do the overlay.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be a minimum of 2 inches replaced and perhaps as much as 4. And then in certain areas where there's just damage, it's going to be more than that.
Given the traffic between the two airports, wouldn't we be better served to take that $4.2 million and put it towards Grants Pass Airport instead of Illinois Valley?
Without a doubt. Without
I mean, I hate to say anything, but I have the only plane I've seen take off and land is yours.
Well, in all fairness, there's a flight school out there. There's Scott Taylor, Keith Hill, Aaron Beckard, Bill Gettle, a bunch of people who use their aircraft for business, fly between Southern California and Illinois Valley directly, as opposed to driving out to Medford and getting on a commercial.
Right, I get that.
You know, yeah. But so there's a lot of activity out there that is basically unseen because it's an isolated place. Okay, there are.
It's also a 5,000 foot runway. Yeah. That's substantial.
It is. It is.
What's that compared to our runway out of Grants Pass?
4,000 feet at Grants Pass, and that's always been a problem. I've talked about this a couple of years ago, and I said, look, the FAA, in their what I consider to be blind stumbling forward all the time, trying to find ways to spend the money that they keep getting, okay, they're prioritizing things incorrectly. But I cannot change their priorities, try as I might. I have discussed taking this $4.2 million that we're going to get next year for the resurfacing and say, I could sure use that at Grants Pass right now. Nope, sorry. Long-range planning.
Yep, it's already allocated.
You know, I said, I've been here for 8 years. I keep saying, I bring this up every year, you know. So, good point. But it falls on deaf ears. And the Airports District Office, the ADO up in Seattle, there are about a dozen of these around the country, and each of these regional offices manage the local airports. Like, ADO here has Washington State, Oregon, Idaho, a little bit of Montana, okay. They are a dysfunctional group. I was up there a week ago Tuesday and sat around a table a little bit bigger than this with eight people in the room. Oregon Department of Aviation was on the conference call. Corley McFarland, our engineer, was with me there at that meeting. And we explained to them how we have evidence in hand that shows we have more operations by larger aircraft that need a longer runway than they require for justification to give us the money to build that extension. They won't do it. So I pushed the issue with the manager of the ADO, and you were all copied separately on the email that I sent to her along with all the evidence and the signed letters from CEO saying, right. Hey, we're replacing the aircraft that we are currently operating are too large for this airport. They're too large for this runway. Right. But
they can't take off if the weather's not right, half a tank of fuel.
And we are replacing those aircraft with bigger ones that require even more runway than we have, okay? And we are choosing to do this knowing that in your wisdom, you're basically going to give us the money that we need to extend this out to 5,500 feet total. So the bones of contention are either a 400-foot extension, which they're currently offering us because it's justified in their book, or a 1,500-foot extension, which we need. And we think, firmly believe, and it's based in evidence that that's required for safety. So,
okay, well, at some point in time, and we've talked about this because Commissioner Morgan has talked back in Washington to our representative at the national level,
mm-hmm.
and I think we agreed to say, hey, let's wait to hear what you, I guess, the results of the meeting you had last week.
Right.
And if the meeting you had last week is not, hey, well, we're up 400 feet, we're not going to do it, is this the time to turn Commissioner Morgan loose with the likes of DeFazio and Wyden and Merkley?
Mm-hmm.
And Walden and say, hey, if this thing doesn't pass the smell test with the homeless guy down at the bus stop,
mm-hmm.
he will tell you that it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
When do we do that?
We received a response yesterday afternoon from the State of Oregon planner for the FAA, and he said, nope, can't have it.
Then we need to go further.
Yeah.
It's so, time to follow up with DeFazio's office, reach out to you.
I've been in touch with Ed McGlone, who's the mm-hmm. Pacific Northwest Policy Director for Peter DeFazio, and his office is back in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And I've copied him on all of this correspondence, and I've kept him up to date on this, and he said, well, let us know how it goes, because we're spring-loaded to hell if need be. So I got this final answer yesterday. My plan is to call Joel Briggs, who's the ADO manager, and say, gee, that was a disappointment. I noticed that my request for determination was sent directly to you, but the response came back from, you know, a guy who's like three levels down. And I just wanted to make sure that, you know, you were in the loop and knew all about this and, you know, et cetera, and have her tell me no. And then I'm going to send everything to the Honorable Mr. DeFazio, and we'll see what happens then. And we'll see. It'll be interesting because of the politics that we are currently living under. The Secretary of Transportation would be the typical recipient of a letter from the chair of the House Transportation Committee, complaining about the inaction on the runway, the 1,500-foot runway extension at Grants Pass Airport, and would you please update me with status as soon as you know when this is going to take place? What's the Secretary of Transportation going to do with that letter? You know, if we have, you know, in a neutral world, they would direct their FAA director, who would then direct the ADO manager, who would then, you know, et cetera, you know, trickle downhill kind of a thing. It may never get that far, but that's all speculation.
My question is, do they ever give you the reason why not? I could say, well, no, you know, but there is no really feasible reason why they could say, well, because the mountains are too close, and when you get to the end of 1,500 feet, your climbing rate or, you know, all of the aeronautical stuff, your headlights shine in North Valley High School mm-hmm. or whatever. But whatever that is, they've never given you a reason.
So,
correct?
The purpose of my call to Joel will be to say, so there must be a money problem. Because your own policies and procedures and orders, internal documents that I have access to, state that we have made our case. And you have the authority to authorize this 1,500-foot extension per your own internal policy and guidance. So it must be a money issue or something, right? I mean, do you know that
they're costing us more money by doing this?
They're costing themselves and the taxpayers almost double. Almost double.
Because, that's my issue with it.
Yeah, it's just terrible. So I said to them, look, in the real world, and I didn't really care that I insulted them by saying that, in the real world, and this is where I come from in the business world, you have an opportunity to do an environmental assessment and a 30% design for a 400-foot extension or a 1,500-foot extension. The first one costs $1 million. The second one costs $1,000,001. Okay? So let's do the $1,000,001 and then...
Be ready.
Yeah, and be ready to do the 1,500-foot... No. Our next step, now that we've made you do the master plan over again in, you know...
In anticipation.
7 years after we did the other one.
Right.
Okay? We made you do it over again because that's a delaying tactic. This is the subtext. They don't say this out loud, okay?
That is.
2 years delay to do the master plan update, which justifies only a 400-foot runway extension. So we cannot move forward with a 1,500-foot study grant for an environmental assessment and 30% design based on only a 400-foot justification. We won't do that.
And the justification is we didn't have enough traffic out there.
Not enough traffic by big enough airplanes.
By big enough airplanes.
But which we can't do because they won't give us the...
We can't do, right?
It's a catch-22.
So it's one of those if you build it, they will come situations, okay? And I've also pointed out that all the horsey people in the whole world who flew to Portland Meadows to watch their critters run are going to be coming here. They're going to be landing at Grants Pass Airport in their... You know, Falcon 900s and Gulfstream 5s and whatever else, okay? Oh, wait a minute. Oh, gosh, no. Sorry. Head of the corporate flight department just noticed that it's only a 4,400-foot runway, and we're going to Medford.
We're going to Medford. Might as well stay in Medford because we're close
to
the
plane. Yeah, heck yeah. We'll just have a limo, and we'll go back and forth between here and Medford. So, I mean, I told the FAA, you guys are killing us, man. You're just killing us, okay? This is an opportunity to do the right thing, which is... Safety first, okay, economic development, business opportunities. We've got all of this stuff that's just bursting at the seams.
And taking and relieving some of the traffic from Jackson County Airport when all these planes have to go to Jackson County and fight with all the commercial airlines and your freight in and out of there.
The question has come up, why not route them to IV Airport, which is longer?
Well, there's no instrument... approach into IV Airport. There's no services at IV Airport. We don't have jet fuel available. We have no taxis, no rental cars, no nothing.
Between there and here is one of the most dangerous stretches of Oregon.
Sure.
Highway in Oregon.
Well, you know,
well, if we ask it out loud, we have the answer when people say.
Yeah.
All right.
How can we help?
Well, I'm going to have one more conversation with Manager Joelle Briggs at the ADO, and I'm planning on doing that today. And then when she says no again, I'm going to be calling Ed McGlone, and I'm going to say, I pulled the pin, you know, here it is, let's go. And I would love it if, you know, Herb Bartschiger's written a letter to...
Can Herman lean? He's a pilot. Has Herman leaned in on this at all?
He called me this morning, 5 minutes before 9, and said, hey, did you get my letter? And I said, I did not, Mr. Senator. I'm sorry. And he goes, oh, yeah, we wrote a letter to Joelle Briggs up there. And I said, haven't gotten it. So I've been working, you know, I'm on email the whole time back here. And I wrote back to Michael Sellers, his chief of staff, and to Herm. And I said, hey, I didn't get anything. You know, here are my two email addresses that either one of them work. And so hopefully we'll get copied. I went and checked my Fortimail, spam can to make sure it didn't get dropped in there. It wasn't in there. I had five others from before 8 o'clock this morning, but yeah. Anyway.
Well.
So yeah, that's really that's the elephant in the room here in this quarterly update, is that we've been jumping through every conceivable hoop and proving our case, and yet, nope, sorry, not going to work.
I don't know the reason why. They have to come up and say, well, we're not going to do it because of.
Yeah.
And to say, well, no, it's because we want to keep ourselves busy for the next go-around, because if we give you 400 feet, that'll take 5 years, and then that sets us up for, we'll do phase 3, which is the next 500 feet, and then we'll do 500 feet, because it keeps eternally arguing about this thing forever.
And every set of those requires a plan and engineering of this. And so
we're keeping so many people
the cost.
Busy.
So here's the letter from the FAA that I received yesterday at 1:03 p.m. Larry, thank you for the email and the additional information as we had discussed during the recent joint planning conference, which is where I was last Tuesday. I have reviewed the attachments you've provided in your October 29th email, and I have concluded the information is not sufficient to justify a 5,500-foot runway length. For the FAA to determine justification based on projected operations, we would need firm aircraft orders with N numbers from multiple users.
Wow.
Not true. Absolutely not true.
You see, where is that in the ruling?
Based on my review of the letters provided, I noted only one aircraft on order that supports the 5,500-foot runway length request. While Dutch Bros and PacJet both appear to have plans to acquire B-2 large aircraft, a lot of jargon in here, I'm translating, the plans are not mature enough to warrant consideration. Additionally, the letters from both Pacific Aviation and PacJet regarding runway length requirements are for B-1 small aircraft, which is currently justified and included in the justified 400-foot runway extension identified in the master plan currently under development. If you have any questions, please let me know.
So, based on what I heard you say, because of my previous contacts in D.C., would you like me to continue to aid as far as with the contacts with D.C.?
I think we need to fire all the guns like we usually do.
Yeah.
I just want
to get this thing coming from every angle we could possibly do it. It's just like ODOT. Remember when we said every opportunity we have to talk third lane, we were going to do it. And guess what? Now we're starting to move forward on it. We've got to do this exact same thing to help Larry out here.
I don't want to do anything that's outside of what you guys would want me to do, but... I'm happy to come alongside. And
Larry said to hold off. He's our airport director. He's on the boots on the ground. And he said, hold off till I at least have this meeting.
Yeah.
Sounds to me like he's had the meeting. He's even followed up with letters to this gentleman and everybody else along the line, and they're all saying no because they just, we just don't feel like it at this time. And I think it's time. I think if you've got that connection, let's use it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not... Okay. What are you going to do? What are they going to do? Tell you no again?
Well, they can, but at least we've tried every opportunity.
But it would be really nice,
correct,
to pour some heat on them from above.
And absolutely, I believe Congressman DeFazio wants to help, and it gives him a project in district that he can help, specifically related to him being chair of transportation. So. I called the district office in Roseburg. Mm-hmm. They had D.C. contact me immediately. I mean, it was a very quick response, and then connected them with Larry for the sake of that. But I think you're right. It's probably time to have come on board that it's not just our airport director, but with the commission behind, with your blessing.
From the board. From the board. Yeah. How did this turn out? You know, I turn you over to Larry. That's fine because he's got all the information, the technical stuff, but... From a project standpoint, the Board of County Commission wants this done.
Yes.
We see the need.
Yeah.
We see the need. We'd do it ourselves if we had the money.
We're pushing for economic development. We're pushing for safety. We're pushing for...
Everything.
Yeah. And this is... They've been telling us to work toward this for how many years, and all of a sudden say, oh, wait, never mind?
Can we have a conversation? And there's a possibility. If we don't have a runway long enough to take off tankers... boring tankers, do we?
No.
Okay. What would that mean? Would the 5,500 foot do it?
Yep.
There's another element. If we can get Jack...
Erickson
to say, you know what, Jack? How's about us doing one right here? So that because they get tangled up over there. Yeah. They're always having to fly this way to put out fires. Let's put one here.
Yep.
See, Jack, you know, what's in your fire plan? Because he's the guy. He's got some huge pull.
Right.
Look what he did to Redmond Airport for crying out loud.
Exactly. And Prineville. Which is where they went when they got turned down over here at IV.
Right.
And now Prineville's getting a $5 million fire base put in by the Forest Service.
Exactly.
You know,
correct.
Yeah.
Exactly. We're on board for that.
Yeah.
That's another element we need to hit with. Because if we can get a fire, if we get a fire deal here, we're way ahead of the game. And that also relieves Medford again.
I have an 11 o'clock, so we have a 10 minutes, but I want to make sure that we get through what you want us to do.
Well, I think, I mean, that's the big issue here. And then the other difficult decision that the commissioners are going to have to make is when we pull the pin on this grenade and throw it in the room and the result is, hey, we got a 1,500-foot extension. Let's just fast forward about 3 months, okay?
All right.
Now we got to come up with $1 million.
And I told you, we already had it.
Okay.
It's earmarked for you.
That's great. Good.
We did. I already told you that.
Okay.
Did you tell us?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. I sat down with Arthur, and I said, Arthur, if this thing comes to pass, what usually happens with these huge grants, the main thing they ask you is, do you have the money? Do you have the match?
Well, it's prerequisite.
And I said, Arthur, how do we do that? I says, can we take earmark $1.5 million in the general fund to make his match on a loan? And he said, yes, we certainly haven't, and yes, we could do that.
How?
I didn't talk to him. Huh? I didn't talk to you guys because we haven't had a conversation at a meeting.
All right.
So Arthur says yes.
My question is,
yes.
It's a yes, and then the sheriff has his ask he's coming for? Is it still a yes after all those things?
I just wanted it to be when they say, it's just like over at ODOT. When they say, do you have it? That's a $125 million project. Do you have your 10% match? Jackson County and ODOT said, yeah, we have it. Immediately, that starts the ball rolling. When you say, you know how many times, how many projects, transportation projects I've seen, the guy goes, okay, we have that for talent. It's $1 million match. Do you have that? I know I can get it. I'm pretty sure I can find it. No, you have to have a very definitive answer, and it's earmarked for it. But then it'll be a 4-year project getting it anyway before it ever happens, probably 2 years. And that's when we go to work on it and we find creative ways to get that. But if we could earmark that for it, what better way to do it?
Well, exactly.
In my mind.
This is not, you know, I mean, this is something
with your
that
permission.
Needs to
it's
happen for
permission.
The community. I mean, you know, the Josephine County needs the activity that that longer runway will bring in. It absolutely needs it. And we've got everything else falling into place. But a 4,000-foot runway is just not going to cut it.
Another pipe dream proposal in the works right now that if that thing goes, you will have jets flying in here from all over the place.
Well,
but to go to this facility that is being planned, proposed.
So, and you know, and once again, the FAA doesn't care about economic development or commerce or jobs or anything. So their whole thing is safety. So that's the drum you got to bang on with those guys. And
anyway,
we don't want to wait till we have something piled up at the end of our 4,000.
I hear what you're saying, though.
That's up to you. You guys think about that. You just think about that. If that is kosher to just say, all right, that money it's there.
I think the three of us and Arthur and a couple folks need to sit down, maybe even department heads.
It's there.
And have a strategic discussion about budget. We have not had budget conversations in a planning purpose.
No.
If this is what it is, this is what it's kind of what I've said about our department travel.
Mm-hmm.
When have we actually sat down and said, I know this is coming up and this is what we need to plan for in our budget?
Well,
I want us to do that with the other stuff because in 2 years, the general fund is being drawn down.
We did ask
for SRS to be extended, and DeFazio has carried that. He announced it this last weekend. It's not what we want. We want timber, obviously, but the SRS is being, you know, he is pushing that. And that's a direct correlation of me being the one to verbally ask. We're asking the congressman to add this to the FAST Act for an SRS extension. And he announced this last weekend that he's leading the charge for the SRS extension. And so there's a direct correlation to you sending me to D.C., August.
You're not going to go there anytime.
I think that
that's happened.
But this is.
No, I get what you're saying.
I'm just saying that.
But I think what we need to do is when we look at
need a strategic plan.
We are always told, and this is 10 years that I've been involved in this thing. And when you mention general fund, that's it. Nope, can't touch it. That's a safety net. You can't use it for anything. Don't even think about borrowing out of it because that is got to be there. And I get that the struggle both county and city have had.
Yeah.
But this thing right here, if you just say, we just want to earmark it, and say, Larry, all right, yes. When the ask comes down, yes, you have.
I'm just saying let's put it in a plan so everybody sees what we're working towards.
Yeah. Well, I think that from a director's point of view, the reason why monies have not come to fruition in the past has been because there hasn't been a coming together of the minds. And I don't know what Public Works ask is going to be out of whatever funds you guys have available, economic development money or the Sheriff's Department, sure, or any of these people. I have no visibility into what they
public
need.
Public Works, nothing.
Well, okay, but you know, I don't know. Maybe
we know that one.
Yeah,
that one we know.
Good.
One in a row.
And you know, my proposal to you, in the absence of knowing what anyone else needs, is for a limited period of time, say 4 years or 5 years, just put everything that comes in from economic development from the state, just put it into a pot and escrow it, and that's the match money we need to grow this airport and make it functional for this county for 50 years.
That's why I think we need an economic development plan as well. Right now we have $50,000 going to youth pathways. We have $25,000 to Sir Reddy. We have
Chambers,
10 and 10. Mm-hmm. We have $25,000 to Small Business Development Center. But what is our plan of what is the accomplishment? You know, so
I think
putting a plan in writing of
significant, mm-hmm, yes. And you need details from me. And this is, I just put this in here as a very high level. Look, this is my proposal, and I will fill it in with the ROI that you will get over 5 years, 10 years, on the amount of money we have to spend, what specifically we need to put this into action, and what return do we get?
Right. Is the return enough to start paying that back?
Yep.
Well, it would be a loan. It certainly wouldn't be a gift from them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Unlike the city that gives money out of their general fund to different departments, this would be a loan.
Well, and this is we have talked about what do we focus on that will change the economy of Josephine County.
Mm-hmm.
We have focused on Southern Oregon Air Academy in 3 years of discussions of plan. We've talked about airport expansion. We've talked about youth pathways and preparedness of our youth and our workforce. It can't stop. We have to be intentional, but having a plan of where it's going to. Larry, I needed to let you know one other thing because I'm looking at the time and I got 2 minutes. The bylaws updates that were coming through, mm-hmm, the recommendation to change the quorum in these two committees is counter or opposite of county policy.
Okay.
And the overall county policy on advisory boards defines quorum.
Okay.
As the majority of those appointed.
Right.
So if there's vacancies, it does reduce what the quorum requirement has to be.
Right.
But I...
You don't want to artificially reduce that quorum requirement just because people aren't showing up.
Correct. Because there's something to all those policies that as well says if they're not coming, at some point they get kicked off the board and we find someone who will show up.
True.
So the quorum has to be compliant with county policy. That was my recommendation back.
I get it. That makes sense. Yeah.
But if there's vacancies, it doesn't hurt the group.
Right.
So I just thought I'd let you know why.
Yeah. No, it's timely because we're having a meeting tonight.
And I just, since there is an overall county policy on advisory boards, I just thought I'd let you know that I was looking for consistency there.
Consistency?
Huh?
Why do that?
I know. Policies? Why have them?
Very good.
You know what?
Okay. Timing wise, yeah. Thank you for
Larry.
It's me in here.
Been a rough year. There's been a lot. We've had ups and downs. I want you to know I really appreciate your efforts,
you,
your integrity, your pushing forth to do the right thing. And
well,
I just want you to know that.
You know, from an overall standpoint, I get it. I appreciate that. Thank you, and I appreciate. The totality of everything that's been going on and what my role in it has been, I get that. I mean, there's, you know, that's my job. And I can pull an arrow out of my butt, you know, done it a lot before. So.
Okay.
Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you. So still up on our agenda is Board of Commissioner Executive Office Manager updates and additional subjects matters from commissioners. I would, for the sake of time, recommend that we table these until the 2 o'clock legal counsel update and put them under additional matters from commissioners at that time.
Done.
Granted.
Okay, so motion, thanks, second. Aaron. All those in favor say aye.
Thank you,
aye. Aye. Okay, so we will table till this afternoon, and our meeting is adjourned at 10:59.